Coming up in this episode.
We all feel anxious. We all feel sad. It happens. We're human. But for it to be a disorder, it takes you ignoring your mental health. It takes you leaving it too late. We also have to understand how relationships and love work. It's like taking cocaine.
So, oxytocin.
Yes. It does the same thing to the brain. You know this thing is bad for you, but you get addicted to it.
Right.
So you keep going back and you keep taking it. Hence, you feel like you can't live without it.
The ability to sit in a place, still, no distractions, not watching anything, no television, no cell phone, and just be with yourself and enjoy your own company.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have actually lost that ability, haven't they?
You can't expect another person to love you right if you can't love yourself 100%. Right. Because how am I supposed to love you? What standards are you setting for me?
It goes back to what you said right in the beginning. Self-awareness, cultivating a healthy self-relationship, self-love. And then you set the right bar.
We can avoid a lot of things.
And you set the high standards. Hey there, welcome to another episode of Dangerous But Good with Craig Wilkinson. I've got a fantastic guest today by the name of Senzi. She's dangerous to poor mental health. She's a registered counselor and does the most phenomenal work in the areas of mental health. You have a real passion for helping people to be mentally healthy. Where did that come from?
Oh, I love mental health. And I've always been told that that is a very weird thing to say you love mental health. Like, what would you like about mental health? But I think it's almost my identity. When someone says Senzi, they almost position Senzi with mental health and mental wellness.
Right.
Because
what means you don't like insane people. That's healthy.
Maybe, right? But also, I have a strong belief that everything stems from the mind. If we are okay here, then almost everything works out for the good, right? We are able to think more productively. We are able to do things that we want to do when we want to do them. We are able to plan things accurately. There's just a lot of things that come together just because you are aware of your mental health. And in my line of work, I speak to a lot of people that are not mentally aware. And my job is to say, hey, this is something that is important. Mm-hmm. You know, the body, what I like about physical health is that it's so easy for you to notice that I'm tired, I've got a cough, I see the flu coming. But with the mental illness, you almost think, I'm just sad, it's just today, or I'm moody.
Right.
And then it hits you and you're like, when did I get here? And as a registered counselor, what I see, almost all the people that come to me are already wounded.
Right.
They are
so they almost come too late, eh? Or certainly later than they should have come.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So we don't preach that we have to maintain good mental health every day, just like we preach how to maintain good physical health every day. So we wait for that moment where we feel like we can't get up. Now I have to seek for help. And I'm here to say that we actually have the responsibility, and that's the key word. It's a responsibility to take care and to manage your mental health daily so that you don't end up having to be institutionalized or take medication.
Or have depression or anxiety.
Or have depression, exactly. Right. We all feel anxious. We all feel sad. It happens. We're human, right? But for it to be a disorder, for some people, if it's not genetic, it takes a lot of scenarios. It takes you ignoring your mental health. Mm-hmm. It takes you not being able to, manage some traumas. It takes you leaving it too late. And then
you
get to that point.
This is a great point. I mean, this is taking a direction I didn't expect. But it's almost like, I had the vision of, brushing your teeth to keep your teeth healthy.
Yes, exactly.
So, what are some of the things you do? What is a mental health brushing teeth equivalent?
I love that scenario that you're making, but it's simple things like, and I like to say this, choose the people that are in your circle.
Okay.
I can tell you now that the people that are around you have such a big impact in your mental health, on your mental health. So if you are just open to everything and everyone, you go where the wind takes you, you literally put your mental health at risk.
Well, because you're going to hang out with people who drag you down or to,
Exactly. So there's people that would speak ill. Yeah. There's people that would demotivate you. Mm-hmm. There's people that would really just make you feel like life sucks.
Right.
But if you're not aware of your mental health, you suck it in, right?
Yes.
Now, I'm aware of my mental health. I could spend time with you. The moment I see that you are affecting me in a way that isn't appreciable, I'm able to say, Craig,
okay.
This is
but that comes from an awareness of your mental state. Hey?
Absolutely.
You can actually, and but that also leads to setting boundaries, doesn't it? You know,
it
so
does.
Someone's impacting me negatively. Let me actually withdraw or put a boundary.
Put a boundary.
In place. Yeah, and say
exactly.
No more.
Exactly. And why I'm bringing this is that, I mean, I run a practice, right? Mm-hmm. I see clients all day, every day. And I can tell you about 60, 65 to 70% of my clients have issues with the person next door.
Right.
And
the person
is,
next door means their partner or?
It could be the partner. It could be the family members. It could be a best friend.
Someone in their circle.
Someone close to their circle. Right. And they feel the need to go above and beyond for that individual without looking at self. We often go through self-abandonment.
Yeah.
Right. Where we say, Senzi, you wait. Let me help this person or let me listen to what this person is saying and you forget about yourself. And unfortunately, mental wellness starts with yourself.
Right.
If you are unable to have those boundaries that you're speaking about, if you are unable to evaluate situations, people, you know, things, then you become susceptible to every garbage
so that
is out there.
Kind of relationship you're talking about, it's someone you're giving too much. You're giving more than you're actually getting. You know, it's a net outflow. It's almost like a reservoir that's pouring water out, but there's no one topping it up.
You're giving what you don't have.
What you don't have.
Yes.
Right.
So we always make the analogy of the cup, right? And we say don't give from an empty cup. Mm. This is what we say. But I always say you give the overflow of the cup.
Right.
If I start to take from my cup, it means that I'm giving what I don't have because that is only sufficient for me, right? Yeah. If I'm then starting to give way too much, you start to feel that it is affecting you. Mm. It is making you dry. That is a sign that what you're giving is not what you need to be giving.
So it's out of a sense of duty or obligation or
guilt,
perhaps. So you're saying your cup needs to be full.
All the time.
And when your cup is full, there's an overflow which you can give.
Absolutely.
I love that. You know, that's
absolutely
great. So going back to that, how do you keep your cup full?
How do you keep your cup full? Firstly, you do an introspection. What makes me happy? What gives me peace? You know, you have to spend time alone in as much as you spend time with others.
Right.
You need to be mindful of what you do when you're alone. We encourage you to rest, right?
Mm-hmm.
But too much rest is bad for you as well. So if you're going to sit on the couch the whole weekend, you're going to get... Yes, you're going to be depressed. You're going to be sad. You're going to be... Right? But we also say if it's a... Maybe a Saturday morning, sleep in, you know, but wake up at 10, go for a walk, go to the mall, do something.
Good balance.
You know, be active. So have a good balance. And then number two is that you need to be aware of your thoughts and manage your thoughts.
Right.
So if you start to see that my thought patterns are quite negative, I speak down on myself, I see my life as a big, bad, ugly life, and I'm unable to see positivity, that starts to build what? Anxiety. It starts to build depression. And then for other people, it becomes worse. It builds psychosis. It builds borderline personality disorders, bipolar mood disorders, right? But it starts with your thought patterns. Mm. Your power, and I'm going to repeat, your power is from understanding your thoughts and managing your thoughts. I'm not saying ignore your thoughts, but understand them. That is why, as therapists, we encourage journaling, right?
Right.
Because when you journal, you're able to say, okay, yesterday, this is how I felt about Craig or about my workplace or this or that.
How did you feel about
Right. I feel good about Craig.
I'm glad.
Right. But then, and then you're able to ask yourself, why am I feeling like this? And then, is there something that I can do?
Fantastic. But you know, I mean, the key you keep coming back to is awareness. It's almost, you know, physically as a guy, when you're shaving in the morning, you need a mirror. You've got to look in the mirror. I was going to cut yourself, you know.
Yes.
And you can't shave properly without first looking in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're saying the same thing mentally, mental health-wise. Mm. Be aware of your thoughts. Be aware of your emotions. Be in tune with how you're feeling. Be in tune with how that person, the impact that having on you.
Yes.
You know, you go to a cocktail party. How are you feeling about this? Lonely, anxiety, you know. So it really is a self-understanding and a self-awareness and just looking in the mental mirror.
And building a relationship with yourself.
Right.
How many people would you say know the concept of having a relationship with yourself?
That's true.
Because it's easier to build a relationship with you.
Mm.
It is easier to depend on you to love me, to care for me, to take care of me, to do this, to do that. But how much am I doing for me? And when I say this, people say, are you teaching me how to be selfish?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, no, I'm teaching you to prioritize self and to be self-full. Because when you do that, it actually works good for everyone else around you.
Right.
I sometimes even say that people who don't take care of their mental health are a pain to be
are
around.
Are a pain to be around, yeah.
Yes.
Because they're leaning on you. They're relying on you. You know, they're often quite negative.
And they bleed on you.
They bleed on you.
Yeah, without being aware, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That this is what they are doing. But when they are aware, then they bleed differently. You know, they ask for support.
Right.
They don't throw bad words at you and you know, say ugly things to you.
Yes, they're not victims. They're not entitled. They're not demanding.
They're not entitled. They're not demanding.
I like that. Well, it's fascinating you say that because the most important relationship any of us has on earth is the relationship we have for ourselves.
Exactly.
We hang out with ourselves every single minute of every single day.
Yeah.
You know, we go to bed together. We go to the toilet together.
Can't escape
we eat.
You
cannot escape you. But which leads to an interesting point is a lot of us try and escape ourselves by busyness, don't they?
Yes.
And by, I mean, I know one of the things I have to really counter all the time is going down this rabbit hole of YouTube clips, just clips reels, because it's so entertaining and it's so educational, you know?
Yes.
But, you know, you 3 hours can go by and you've got, you know, but that's an escape, isn't it? It's a failure to actually spend time with yourself.
Yes.
The ability to sit in a place still, no distractions, not watching anything, no television, no cell phone, and just be with yourself and enjoy your own company.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have actually lost that ability, haven't they?
People are afraid of it.
Right.
You know, when that is mindfulness, right? It's like mindfulness practices.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, ooh, these thoughts are too loud,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And for some people, it's even natural that I must block these thoughts out.
Yes, yes.
Right. For some people, even when they're alone, there has to be loud music playing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. My brother actually is like that. And I'll always confront him to say, you can't always have noise. He can't sit in a quiet place, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thoughts are too loud. The thoughts are too disturbing.
So you're scared of what's in your own head. You're
exactly.
not in tune with your own self and in harmony with yourself. I mean, this whole thing of double screening is crazy too. You know, I mean, we all find out you're watching a series and you're also on your phone.
Yes.
I mean, it's very bad for your mental health, isn't it? Because you're just not being in tune with who Senzi is, who Craig is. Not being mindful. But it goes beyond mindful. It goes to actually having a very good relationship with yourself, enjoying your own company, enjoying your own thoughts. So what advice would you to give someone who's just – consumed with busyness, with reels, with watching stuff, with cannot be alone, you know?
Yeah.
How would they move towards a place of inner harmony and good relationship with self and quietness and not being afraid of their own thoughts? How would they do that?
Craig, I'd say create a pause that is good for you, that is relatable to you. We're not saying just sit and stare at nothing. That's not what we're saying.
Mm.
But there are activities that actually motivate for what we're talking about. Like when I go for a walk, that is the best time on earth.
I agree. I'm with you on that.
It is incredible. And it forces me to think. And I come up with amazing ideas when I do that, right? But I've taught myself not to have earphones when I do that, right? Because that is also quite disruptive. I usually used to like be on podcasts while I walk. And then I decided that, you know what? Let me do this without them.
Let me listen to Senzi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because it forces you, right? Pen and paper for people who enjoy writing or journaling or poetry or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, sit down with your thoughts and actually write them down.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes spending time with yourself could also be reading something that is in relation to your situation, right? It could be that maybe you're trying to be a better mom, for example, and you buy a book on motherhood and you are
self-development.
Exactly. And that is you spending time with yourself.
Right.
You're not being busy.
You're growing yourself.
You're growing yourself.
Yeah. You're not entertaining or distracting. You're growing.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I love what you're saying here. And I mean, there's some really keys here. Self-awareness. Be aware of yourself. And then cultivate a beautiful relationship with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yes.
Beautiful. You know, it's lovely.
It's beautiful.
It's so simple, eh?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's not simple, you know.
It's not easy, but it's simple.
It's not easy. Yeah. Okay, it's not easy, but it's simple. Yes, I love that. I wish so much that parents would teach their children self-love from a very tender age. Because when you learn how to love yourself, you avoid so many things. You know, people who get stuck in relationships that they know that this is no longer good for me, but they can't get out.
Yeah,
why?
Yeah.
Because I can't live without this person, But imagine if that person had already cultivated a relationship with self.
You don't need anyone. You may want them. You can give. You know, that's I often say that to people as well, is that the best couple is someone who was the best single.
Yes.
You know, if you can be healthy and whole and happy alone,
yes,
you're going to be a great partner.
1,000%.
But if you need somebody to be okay,
red flag.
it's a disaster. And how many people get together where they both need each other? They don't. It's not. I'm a healthy individual bringing a healthy self-love and to you, and you doing the same to me. And boy, we can grow together. Mm-hmm. You know, as opposed to I need you, you need me. You know, it's just going to be a disaster.
The moment someone says they need me, I'm like, oh boy,
you run for the hills. You run for the hills.
Yeah, because you want to appreciate having me.
Right.
We want to have the reciprocal relationship.
Fantastic.
You know, where I give, you give, you take, I take.
And then the two is greater than the sum of the parts. Eh? Yes. What you create together is greater than, as opposed to taking from
exactly.
each other.
And no one feels dry and worn out, you know, just because now they have to spend time with you. Yeah. We're both benefiting from this, which is great.
So the most important relationship on earth you can possibly have is the one with yourself.
Exactly.
Cultivate romance yourself. You know, take yourself on dates. I mean, be alone. You know, how many people can be alone? You know, isn't it funny when you're in a doctor's waiting room or you're waiting in a queue? Almost nobody is just, you know. Everyone is frantically on their
phone. Yeah,
have you seen in a restaurant, you know, when someone gets up to go to the loo, instead of a person just thinking they're contemplating, they grab their phone immediately. Huh?
Leave your phone when you go to the loo.
I mean, we could really benefit from being, and it goes right back to having a healthy self-love and a great relationship with self. And it's not selfish. It's crucial.
It's crucial.
Yeah.
Self-full. It's crucial. It's important for everyone, even for parents.
Yeah.
Because if you have learned how to love yourself, take care of yourself before you are a parent, you will not
need.
Your kids. You're able to let them be themselves, right? Yeah. So it's just crucial for every relationship that you're going to build. Yeah. So it starts with yourself.
I love it.
A lot of people struggle with that. It really is basic.
And something we need to really encourage people to do. Hey?
Exactly.
Let's go into, I think in terms of mental health, there's a continuum. Hey, I'm functional. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I'm busy. I'm not really in a great relationship with myself, but I don't know. No one else knows. You know, I'm good. And then it goes towards more pathological stuff and, you know, extreme anxiety, depression, leading towards suicide. So there's that whole continuum. You know, we do a lot of work, as you know, and we're going to be working together in that. In communities around South Africa. And the observation is that most South Africans suffer from a degree of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Yeah. We do a lot of work in Alexander. And, you know, one of the young guys, one of our mentors there said, growing up in Alex, there were times when he would walk to school and literally have to walk over or around dead bodies on the street.
Yeah.
A lot of his friends grew up in sibling-led households, no parents, you know. So a young girl, teenage girl, is the mother of the household. Mm-hmm. So the point is the degree of trauma and if you look at the Cape Flats in Cape Town, you know, the gangsterism, you know, you look at the amount of trauma that South Africans are enduring and going through is just absolutely through the roof. Mm-hmm. And we need to bring healing to that. Mm-hmm. And I love what you do, Cindy, and I just want to honor you. I mean, you have an organization where you train up volunteers, social workers, counselors, psychologists. Mm-hmm. You train them to be to volunteer to provide mental health care to individuals who don't have the money and the resources to do that. Mm-hmm. Because let's be honest, you know, I mean, a wealthy person growing up in a suburb is part of medical aid can pay for, you know, sitting in front of a counselor, whereas very few South Africans have that. Yes. Privilege and you're providing that privilege for people free of charge and just hats off to you for that, man.
Yeah, thanks.
How do we address this? How do we bring healing to someone who's had just by virtue of their upbringing, living in a violent society, living where there's gender-based violence, there's drug abuse, there's gangsterism, you know, I mean the trauma, you know, and no one is looking at that kid and saying, you know, this is an unnatural environment and you're growing up wounded. How do we address that?
Yeah. You know what, Craig? We live in a very wounded society and people are going through a lot daily. Like you mentioned the example of seeing dead bodies.
Yeah.
There's adults who actually see bad things. Mm-hmm. On a daily basis. So this trauma builds up. It builds up. It almost becomes functional. Yeah. Where when you see a dead body, you're like, oh, it's just a dead body, right? But that is not how our brains work. I just need to start there. That is not how our brains, you feel like you are able to function, but it's almost like putting dirt under the carpet.
Right.
Your brain does that.
It's building up.
It's building up, right? And then you start to see your body reacting because you're putting everything in the subconscious mind. You start to see either you're losing weight or you're gaining a lot of weight or you're eating too much or you're eating less. Or you start to see that you have heavy shoulders, you have headaches, you just become physically sick,
right.
Or you forget things, you become easily disturbed, you can't focus, you can't
just not
listen,
functioning
you're not
properly.
Able to function, but you aren't able to pinpoint it to the fact that you always see dead bodies.
Yeah.
Right? So I want to say that there isn't anyone that goes through trauma and doesn't have to deal with it.
They escape unscathed.
Nah.
It's not possible. Yeah.
Trauma demands to be dealt with. It's obviously. Like grief.
Yes.
You can't escape it. And the only way to deal with trauma is through talk therapy.
Right.
We can't remove the memory. Mm-hmm. We can't say it never happened. We can't change your past. We can't change even your present.
But you can process it.
But we can process it through talk therapy. And that is what counseling is mostly about. And then what it also does is that it gives something we call itemba, which is hope, right? And hope means that we are able to say, yes, you come from this deep, dark place, but how can we slowly get you out?
Right.
And let us help you see the other side, that light that is over there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're so used to this dark place, it feels impossible to even imagine that there could be a different life for you.
So hope, I like that.
Hope. So therapy gives you that, but not just hope, how we get to the place that hope is at, right?
And you as counselors are the ones who hold the person's hand and take them on the
process.
Journey.
So we don't promise that we're going to erase the memory or you're going to be happy tomorrow. But what we're saying is remove the plaster.
Yes.
It's been on for too long.
Right.
Let us clean this wound. And cleaning the wound is damn painful. It is painful.
So it takes some courage to
it
go there.
It takes courage. Mm. I love that word, courage. And unfortunately, that is why a lot of people sit with trauma.
Yes.
Because if you're going to work through it, it means I'm going to cry. I'm going to feel this pain again. You're asking
me
to remember what happened to me when I was 5. It was terrible. And I've forgotten about it. But your psyche hasn't forgotten.
Yeah.
Your body hasn't forgotten. But therapy says, come here.
Come.
Take me back to 15 years ago. Let's chat. And after the first session, you might walk out feeling worse than how you felt walking in.
Because you've opened the wound.
Because you've opened the wound. But when you keep coming back, then the wound heals.
Fantastic.
But it never heals if you're just plastering it and you just plaster and you're just changing the plaster.
Yeah.
Right. And for some people, the plaster is what? Drugs. It is sex. It is alcohol.
Anesthetics.
It is,
anesthetizing the pain.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's a wonderful podcaster who says, he asked the question, he says, you know, every one of us should sit on the edge of our bed one day and say, is there anything that I'm doing that's destructive to myself or my family?
Mm.
It could be drugs. It could be alcohol. It could be masturbation, pornography, all the things that we look to. Is there anything that I'm doing that I know this is not my best life? This is not my best self, you know?
Mm.
And let's deal with that. Let's bring
deal
it out.
With that.
Is there anything in my life that is, substandard? You know, am I just not performing? And let's deal with it, you know? Mm. Let's bring it out into the light. I want to talk to you about men because we work a lot with men.
Yes.
And I think men are particularly.
I love them.
It's fantastic. Yeah, well, true masculinity is a beautiful gift.
Yes.
It really is. It's not toxic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not trash. It's a beautiful gift.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it can go wrong and cause great harm. But I think one of the big things with men is we don't like to admit vulnerability or weakness or wounds, you know. We work in one of the communities we're working in. We wanted all of our mentors to go through HIV testing, you know.
Wow.
And it was so amusing but tragic at the same time. Some of the guys would get to the end of the queue and then just bolt. The one guy took about 4 or 5 attempts to actually get him into the clinic, you know.
Yeah.
Because the mindset is I'd rather not know. You know, I don't want to, you know,
yes.
I'm okay. I don't want to. But I think men find it very difficult to talk about. I want to go to women too because I think some of the wounds that women carry inflicted at the hands of men are serious. But how do we get men to talk? How do we get men to say, it's okay, you know, you life has been tough. You know, you've had to carry and shoulder burdens. But guys, man, let's deal with it. Let's bring it out.
Mm. You're asking me something that is quite difficult to answer. Because you're saying, how do I get someone who has been programmed that talking is weakness to actually talk?
Yeah.
it goes back to the individuals.
Yeah.
They need to first believe that talking is okay. But for us, the women in their lives, the friends in their lives, the people in their lives, we need to provide a safe space.
Right.
So the reason why men can't talk is that there's no safe spaces for them, right? I am a registered counselor, and I'm very comfortable to say to a male, would you like to speak to another male?
Right.
Because a priority for me is for you to be able to speak, right, without feeling like anyone will judge you or will belittle you. And unfortunately, sometimes when men speak to women, they feel like this one is going to judge me or this one doesn't get it. We need other men to support other men. We need brothers keepers.
Fantastic.
Right?
I love it.
So if I see you and you're older than me and I'm a guy and I'm able to look up to you and you're able to listen to me, you're able to be vulnerable with me, I'm most likely to be vulnerable with you. And sometimes, unfortunately for guy friends, is that we don't want to go there, right? We'd rather speak about soccer, we joke around.
Well, we want to be tough for each other.
But I've seen it numerous times when someone comes and they are vulnerable first.
Mm. They lead the way.
Yes, they lead the
way. They give permission to the others to do the same.
It becomes so much easier. Yeah. So I think the best approach here is for women to just be a little bit lenient, right? Be a little bit less judgmental, provide safe spaces, and speak a little bit less. You know, we just talk too much.
Can I get that in writing? Can you sign that for me?
We just talk too much, you know. And sometimes we just need to speak a little bit less and to listen a little bit more, to say, I hear you, I get you. And then for the guys, to the guys, please start. If you've got the courage, you start being vulnerable
Lead
first.
Lead the way.
And I promise you, it changes everything, right? And maybe if you were friends for a long time and it's a group of friends and you start, they're going to laugh. Like, dude, what's wrong with you? Do it again.
Yeah.
And do it again.
Because you'll find they're also in the same boat.
And then you'll see that one of them will go out of the group and WhatsApp you or text you privately and say, dude, what you spoke about there.
Yeah.
I'm also having problems at home.
Right.
Or I'm also having this. But that is the fastest way for healing. It is for men to unite and be vulnerable with each other.
I love it. So you as a woman give us permission to be vulnerable, eh?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
We do.
Yeah. That's crucial. It's absolutely. Now, talking about a lot of pain comes from relationships, doesn't it? And we live in a country which is probably one of the highest rates of gender-based violence in the world. A lot of women hang around in relationships longer than they should because they haven't set the boundaries. And women, I think by nature, you are fixers and healers. And you know, you want things. And you always, you know, I mean, tragically, you'll see a woman being abused. The abuser then has all this sorrow and tears. And she runs back and says, oh, but I can fix him. I can. What advice do you give those women? I mean, as a man, I just say, get out, man. Get out. Set a boundary. You deserve better. But what advice would you give a woman in that situation? Because it's all too common, isn't it?
I always say, girl, you got to love yourself better.
Yeah,
better
love yourself. So it goes back to the self-love.
I always say that. And I have cases like that all day, every day. And I'm going to, I'll ask them, why are you still there?
You deserve more.
What is this doing for you? And it's always, I don't think I can live without him.
Wow.
But we also have to understand how relationships and love work. It's like taking cocaine. Same thing. It does the same thing to the brain, right?
So, oxytocin.
Yes. So you know this thing is bad for you, but you get addicted to it.
Right.
So you keep going back and you keep taking it. Hence, you feel like you can't live without it. But just like with a drug, if you go a couple of weeks, months without it, you go through this painful feeling, you know, these withdrawal symptoms, but eventually you become fine.
Right.
Similar with this.
Right.
Right. But a lot of women can't stand that.
That period
that
of withdrawal.
Period, yes, of those withdrawal symptoms. And some women, of course, it's financial, where they feel like, I need the money, right?
There's a dependence.
But when you go to counseling, we can show you how you can make your own money.
Right.
Right, we can show you that life can actually be better without this person. And another thing that women have to understand and notice, men are wounded. There's a lot of men that are, a man will not just beat you up if he's not wounded,
it's not healthy masculinity.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not healthy masculinity. So that man is wounded, but it has nothing to do with you.
And you can't fix it.
You can't fix it.
I think that's the key. You cannot fix your partner. Let them go away, get fixed, maybe come back if they've repented and changed.
Yes.
But you cannot fix it.
You can't
fix it. I think women want to fix, don't they? I mean, it's in your heart, isn't it? As mothers and as nurturers, you want to fix people, but you cannot fix a partner who's being abusive to you.
But Craig, we can support. We can love. We are built like that. Yeah. We can provide a warm home, but it needs to be appreciated.
It needs to be a safe space. It has to be safe. You cannot provide a loving home to someone who's unsafe to you.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, so the two things there, and I get very passionate about this, is love yourself more.
Exactly.
And get the hell out of there.
Exactly.
Those are two bits of advice.
Exactly.
Don't stick around. You can't fix it.
Right. And remember this. You can't expect another person to love you right if you can't love yourself
100%,
100%. Right. Because how am I supposed to love you? What standards are you setting for me? So I treat you as what you show up as.
Right.
Right. So if you are desperate for me, why do I need to treat you like you are?
Exactly. But it goes back to what you said right in the beginning, self-awareness,
exactly.
Cultivating a healthy self-relationship. Self-love, and then you set the right boundaries.
We can avoid a lot of things.
And you set the high standards. That's why for me as a father, you know, father is a passion of mine. I have a daughter, a beautiful daughter, and I'm not just biased as a father. But for me, my theory was if I, as her father, love her, romance her in a beautiful way, tell her and show her how beautiful, how precious, how valuable she is, no, she's not going to fall for any dude that comes along, you know. Her standards are going to be very high. She knows that I deserve from a man love, safety, care, nurture, provision. And that's the standard. End of the story.
Craig, this is the most important job you'll ever do.
Yeah.
And you're doing it right. Mm. Well done. Because you're right.
Yeah.
When another man comes and says, you're beautiful, she already knows it.
She already knows it.
Not telling you something new, but
I'll
take the compliment.
Yeah.
Right?
But I don't need it.
But I don't need it because when I see myself,
I
believe it. Why? Because my dad taught me that from a very young age. It's infused in me.
I know who I am.
I know who I am and I believe in that. Mm. And already her standards are set. Fantastic. So she's not going to tolerate nonsense.
Absolutely.
Because you've set high standards. Ooh, poor guy. But the standards are already high.
I don't
high.
Feel anything for that guy. He must bring the right stuff for my daughter.
This is the most important work you'll ever do in your entire life. And you're doing it right.
But let me ask you this question. For a young woman who's grown up and not received that, and she's filled with insecurities, about her body, about who she is, and she has a tendency towards accepting the love of a guy, which is not love, it's just lust.
Yes.
How does she go about building and restoring a sense of self-love and pride and a knowledge of the fact that she's a princess and she's beautiful and she deserves? What is the process of rebuilding a shattered self-esteem?
Can I tell you it's not easy?
I know it's not easy.
This is very, very hard because you have to unlearn and you have to stop needing and start giving to yourself. And it doesn't hit the same way. When I give to myself, I don't feel that emotional fulfillment as much as I do when another person gives me.
I'm craving it from someone else because I never got that.
I'm craving validation.
Yeah.
So when you tell me I'm beautiful versus when I tell myself I'm beautiful, it's not the same. So it takes a long time, but you need to start, right? And you need to practice it. And what I do with young ladies, I say, write down the type of love you think you deserve in one paper, and then write down the type of love that you think is toxic. Come back with it. Let's read it. And then I ask you, do you think you deserve to have this? How do you think you can get to this?
Yep.
Right? And they know the answer.
Right.
That I have to love myself and I have to invest in myself first. And I say, I challenge you to start today. And I challenge you to always be aware of this guy and remove yourself at the first opportunity that you can.
It's like a drug, isn't it?
It is like a drug.
Cut the drug.
Cut the drug. Mm. The moment you start to see that this has a potential of having, you know, an addictive thing, then you just leave it because you have to first start with with this person, which is you, and then you start to build your standards, right? And while you're still struggling to do that, because it does take a long time and it's not easy, and it does feel good, even if a small dosage of this,
even though it's toxic.
Yes, it does feel good, is that therapy is for that. Let us remind you. Come back and tell me that you met a guy, right? And let us talk about it. And you're like, shit, it's this again. Or remind yourself, you know, to say that this is not what I said I want. Therefore, I'd rather just pause. And then, lady, build good relationships with other people. This is another mistake that women make, is that you fall in love, you forget your friends, you forget that there's a career you need to focus on, you forget that the school that you can, you know, focus on, you forget your own family, and you focus on this one individual, right? So your life has got a lot of facets. A relationship is the cherry on top.
Right.
A man is a cherry on top. So focus a lot on building the foundation of your whole life. Yes, we say build the internal person, but also other areas of your life need to be balanced. And I promise you, there isn't a man who doesn't know his story that will come and approach you. A man that will come and approach you had better know what he's about, right? And you also have programmed your mind. No matter where you come from, you could be coming from the deepest, darkest places on earth with a lot of trauma. Once you start to work on yourself, you are worthy, and you believe that you are worthy.
And you command respect, don't you? People will, because you respect yourself, others will automatically respect you. I love
that.
You know, I mean, maybe we can finish on this note, but the power of the right kind of fellowship and the right kind of interaction is enormous, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, we find, we work with a lot of men, and we find when we get a group of brothers together and we give them a platform to talk and just share stuff that they've never shared in their life before, healing takes place. There's no professional counselor. There's no, it's just the power and the transformative healing power of having a relationship with people who listen to you, who hear you, you're able to share, and you're able to hold each other to higher standards. It's a very beautiful thing, isn't it? And I think as South Africans, because and both men and women are guilty of this. You get together a bunch of friends and you're showing off to each other, aren't you? You know, as women it might be the nails and the hair and whatever the case. As men, it's, you know, how many press ups I can do. You know, but we're showing off to each other as opposed to really. And you want to get out of that kind of group. You want to get into a group of people who really see you. I get you, man. So, brother, how are you? You know, not just, they say the biggest lie that most men tell is I'm fine. You know, as opposed to let's just be real, you know, because such healing can come of that, hanging out with the right people. I think you mentioned that right up front.
That is very important. Like-minded people or people that have gone through the very same experiences as you. I think what it does for you, Craig, is that, I'm not alone thing. Right? Because all the time, most of the time we feel like, there's something wrong with me. Or I'm not handling this, you know, correctly, or, you know, but when you start to speak two people that have gone through the same thing, you're like, I'm not weird. I'm not mad. I'm not crazy. I'm not weak. That this is normal. And that is the power, right? And the power of holding each other's hands. The I'm not alone aspect of it,
right?
That there are other people that can hold my hand. When I know that every Friday when I go to this group, there's people, there's other men, there's other women that will hear me. So yes, it's important.
It goes back to Ubuntu, hey? Ubuntu, we need each other. We need each other.
We do.
Yeah, we're not isolated. And you know, who said it? Maya Angelou said, I'm human, therefore nothing human is foreign to me. You know, whatever I'm going through, you know.
That next person.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we are human. But any final words?
Sorry, before final words, on that point, I just want to say that we also need to be quite vigilant and aware of the type of people we associate ourselves with. So support groups are important because it's like-minded people. And like the South African Depression and Anxiety Group has got thousands of support groups that people can tap into where you meet like-minded people. So so that you don't feel like you have to speak to just anyone.
No, help is there.
Help is available. But with my last words, I'd like everyone to remember what I said in the beginning, that everything starts and stems from here, the mind. So we all have a critical responsibility to manage and take care of our mental health for everything else to fall into place. We are offering free counseling, and we're not the only people that do that, right? There's a lot of other organizations that do that. Access it, use it, right? And start to command a better life for yourself, no matter where you come from.
I love it. Thank you. Officially, you are dangerous to poor mental health.
Poor mental health.
You're a force for good.